Session number 5868, Haunting Monday, part 46.
And he started telling the tale. He said, what you got to do when you get up to the front, he says, you've got nothing to be frightened of. Oh no, he said. You keep your heads down, he said. You keep your heads down in the trench. He said, that you'll be safe. He said, the Germans, you know, he said, they can't shoot like you can. They're not so good as you. And it got up my back so much. I said, you said they can't shoot? No, not like you people, I said. I said, I've been up there twice, they've hit me both times. I said, I reckon they can shoot all right. Oh, he said, I said, have you ever been up there? Oh, no, he said. I said, you talk like a bloody fool. I said, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, because that caused the heat. Call me. Oh, hell. He called me all the bastards he could lay his tongue to. Everything. I didn't hit him, because if you hit NCO, you're shot straight away, you know. No doubt about it. And I just had a court-martial, that made it worse. So I didn't do nothing. So at the finish, when we saw ready to march off parade, I said to him, I said, look, I said, do you mean you take a little walk somewhere? Oh, yes, yes, he said. I said, oh, hell. We did. We walked back to the camp. And as we come in the camp, I said, would you leave your tunic in you? Where's it? In the your barrack room. They were all huts. Oh, yes, he said. I thought, oh, blimey. I was top of the world. And he rode in one file, went a few more yards, opened. He turned round, opened the door in hut, and walked in. There was officers sat the other day. No, no. Yes, Corporal, oh, this man's been swearing and insulting me. 10 days CB, there you go. Well, from that, I had to go these 10 days CB. And, because you couldn't go out of barracks, CB, couldn't find the barracks. We had to go down unloading ships in the dock. Well, when we was down in the docks, this other chap, I'd see he got one wound stripe, see? Well, you knew then, if you were wounded, you had a gold bar. Well, I'd got two, you see. I'd been wounded twice. And me and him paired up, I said to him, I said, oh, hell, I said, are you in trouble? Yeah. I said, what's up with you then? I saw, I said, no, he asked me, that was it. He said, what's up with you? I said, oh, I said, I fell out with one of the yellow bellies. Told him what I thought. I said, what are you here for then? He said, just the bloody same. He said, I told him what I thought. I said, oh, this is the going price for the job. I remember that. And so we paired up then. Well, now, later, all this crowd, you see, they was all put in rows and rows, all on parade, and detailed in batches. See, now they couldn't have had their own badge on. I can't remember what the hell they could have had on, because none of them went to, they all went to different regiments, because I asked the officer there, I says, can I go back to my own regiment? See, because I'd got me Buck's badge on when I went out, back again, you know, the old Buck's badge. I said, can I go back to me own mob, you know, with all my own mates from Braddle that was left there? Oh, no, he said, no, no, line up with the rest. See, well, then when I lined up with the rest, they ticked us off in badges. Well, you didn't know where the hell you were going. Perhaps that batch of 40 or 50, see, and they'd say certain regiments, see, and might be the Lancashire Fusiliers, Welsh Regiment, or Ireland Regiment, anything, didn't matter, batches of regiments. When they come along with their batch, I said to this kid next to me, I said, I hope the buggers don't send us to Indian Regiment. But anyway, he ticked us lot off. Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry. I thought that would be all right. I may find some local chaps. But then we had to go. I had a new regimental number. That's why I got two regimental numbers, you see. I had a new regimental number and a Oxford and Bucks bugle badge, you see. And that's how it worked out from that.
I see. So when you were with this chap with the wound stripe,
yeah.
What was his name?
Can't tell you. I completely forgot his name. Yeah, and yet we were together right up till...
So what happened? As soon as you were detailed...
Then you was loaded up, train load of you. And then we went from there up to the back of Arras somewhere. I can't remember the places. But we went up as near as you could get to the back of Arras, see, because that's where the big battle was going to be. And we knew it was coming, of course, we were told. Well, then all these different crowds like us that was batched went to the different regiments that was the back of Arras, you see, and reinforce or bring all those regiments up to full strength. That was the idea. Well, because him and I kept together, and as I say, we went with the Oxford and Bucks, and for a time we had to do, you know, training behind the line, sort of rehearsing the battle as would be.
What sort of things did you rehearse then?
Well, sort of attacking across the fields, and then we had to do range fire. We'd done some more range firing and all.
How far back were you from the front
line? Perhaps 4 or 5 miles. Right. Yeah, 4 or 5 miles back.
And how many were there of the Oxford and Bucks in camp there?
Well, you see, your regiment, your battalion is 1,000.
So it was just one battalion of the Oxford
and Bucks? I was in the 5th battalion of Oxford and Bucks, and I don't know whether that was the only one battalion, mind you. There might have been other battalions, but I was in the 5th. Well, now, you reckon there were 6 divisions? Well, there's, let's see, 20,000 in a division. So that's 120,000 going into that lot, wasn't there? That was it, 6 divisions. Yeah.
And did you, when you went into the 5th Battalion, were there any people from around here that you met?
There were one. Only one that I did meet. And, let's see, a bloke named Arthur Parker. Yeah, a chap named Arthur Parker. That's the only bloke I knew, and he lived down Gravelfield, around North Street, and I lived at the corner on Thompson Street. That was the only bloke I met, and he was officer's servant. Yeah. Why I remember it was him so well... This chap that I powered up with, I may have told you, John Tate, old Fatty O'd was hot stuff with a pack of cards. We used to gamble, but old Fatty was, you had to watch him like hawk. He could twist a card anywhere. But now this chap that I powered up with, he was a masterpiece with cards. I didn't know it till then. And neither of us had got any money, we were broke. And I see that old Arthur Parker, got in with him, and I think he lent us just a few francs. Now, the gambling in them days was brag, blinding brag. Do you know how to play it?
7 cards, is it?
No, 3 cards. Oh, yeah. You have 3 cards and then you brag, see? Mm. You've got piles, pairs, prile, or flush, running flush, or anything like that. See, if you're 3 cards, you've got three fives or something like that, you can brag like hell. So what you do with playing brag, you go round. So you start off, you chuck. So talking in our money now, chuck a tanner in, see, each one chuck a sixpence in, see, and then whoever deals, the next one to him, you look at your hand, you think, oh hell, Ice King Queen, that's worth a tanner. Chuck a tanner in, say. Next one too, you look at his hand. You'll say, oh, no good. Fold it up and pack it in. And so you go round, you see, bragging, then one again another, you see, until there's only two of you left, see. And then the two of you left, you keep bragging one again the other. Suppose you've got a prowl of kings, you'd never give in. But then you keep bragging again the other, but if he happened to have a prowl of aces, you've had it. But then you see, you keep on, and one of the other says, all right, I'll chuck a tanner in to see you. Now, when he shows to you, say, if you've got the best, you are the whole of the pool, right? That's how you play brag. Well, to get back to this tale, am I boring you stiff?
No, in the least, no.
Well, what happened then, this chap was hot stuff. And he said, no, we went in the barn, and there was a gambling school going on in the barn. Four or five, or might have been half a dozen, or four or five any road in a ring, bragging, and you can always drop in a school. I never mind you dropping in a school. And he said to me, he says, wait till I get somewhere. You know, he'd been watching them, watching the cards, see, as they threw in. And he'd been watching them, and he says, you watch when I tell you, you go and sit there. See, and I'll sit here, and that'll be my turn to deal. Right? So, no, it missed the first one. He said, you sit there, I'll sit here. And next but one will be my turn to deal. So I sat there, and he sat in that place. And the first round has come, I'd got nothing worth bothering with. I'd put my tanner in, so I folded my cards up, and that was it. See, I waited. Well, then it come next to it, that hand, was his turn to deal. Dealt all round, I picked my hand up, I thought, oh, hell. I'd got a prowl of queens, three queens. Oh, blimey. Went away, went round and round, all my money gone. I had his, what he got left, he give me his. I says, give me yours, give it him. And I hadn't got enough even then. They were bragging heavy, you see, I hadn't got enough then. So we kept on till I'd put all mine in and all his in the pool. The pool got big, they were going round, got a hell of a sort of lump in the middle. And at the finish, what you do then, when you're broke and you've been bragging, you can cover the pool. See, you put your hat over the pool in the middle, and that's separate, see? And then any bragging done after that is done separate. Well, then when it come to showdown, I'd got a prowl of queens, see? This other bloke, he'd dish this other bloke with a prowl of jacks, three jacks. So as it made him keep on, see? And I'd got the winning hand, so oh, scoot, well, blimey, didn't we have a night? I never knew a chap like him. He could put a card in. Well, you see them on the telly, what was his name? Dick, what was his name? Used to be on the telly a few years back. Just
David Nixon.
You know how he handled cards? Well, this bloke was better him at it. I'm sure he were. Cool, we had a low, we went out, we had champagne, eggs and chips. Oh, hell, we had a hell of a night. Yeah. That's why I remember old Arthur Parker.
Because he gave you the loan to start off.
Yes, yes, yeah.
When you say that you bet sixpence, was that how much you would bet each time, or would it be less than
each time? Oh, no, you had, if you stated a price, because if it was just a small, you know, like when you used to play, like at the Chelms we used to play, where it used to be penny a time. And but when you started to gamble, whatever you put, whatever you agree to, you play. Each one plays. You see, you call, if you like to carry on, you carry on exactly the same. If you decide on pennies, threepenny bits or sixpence or a shilling to brag, you keep it up. Now, there's another sort of brag. There's what they call blinding brag. We used to play that at times when we were well fixed. That meant that what you put in, see, when it come to your turn, if they started round with sixpences, I'd go round and somebody would perhaps make it ninepence, see? Well, if you followed him, you'd got to pay ninepence. And if you'd got a good hand, you'd say, all right, knock it on, make it a bob. See, well, then as you went round, the higher you got, the more they kept dropping out. But that's how they play brag.
Was that the favourite form of entertainment when
the main form of entertainment was if there was a bunch of you, it was brag. But if there was only just one or two of you, the regular game was solo. Yeah.
Was playing cards the popular
pastime? Oh, that was the only pastime there was. Oh, blimey, you get in a camp at Wickham and all. You know, you used to sit in the tent there after lights out with a candle and sit around the candle playing cards at night, and then along had come the military police. Oh, when I was on it, you would wander around the camp and you'd just perhaps see a flicker of a light through a tent. You'd think, oh, somebody, they ain't gone to sleep. You'd bang, bang on the tent with your stick. The whole candle would be blowed out, that's it. Yeah, but that was your main gambling game was solo. Yeah.
What about other forms of entertainment? You know, when you were behind the lines, were there any sort of more organised things that took place?
Very, very little. The main entertainment then was what you made yourself. Unless you was right back, I never went right back to a big base, but mainly, you know, when you went out to rest perhaps 5 or 6 miles or so behind the lines to a village, well, your main entertainment was among yourselves, you see, one or two singers and have a sing-song and all that with the old lantern in the barn and that sort of thing. But beyond that, all it was then was just a sing-song, gambling, card playing, and the restaurants, you know, egg and chips and champagne. Get a bottle of champagne for a franc, bob. Yeah, it's homemade stuff. But it got you drunk, badly drunk.
So, you were behind the lines at Arras. You did your training. How long was it before you...
Well, I reckon we was up there matter of... you have to remember, might have been a month. Just can't remember exactly. Then we went, we were several days in Arras. Quite some little time in Arras, all in cellars and underground buildings and all that. Arras was packed like a beehive with troops, yeah, before the battle. Yeah. And you, because from there you were like the 2 or 3 days before the battle, then you were sent out all in different parts along the front, you know, because there was always troops along the front, naturally. Then you went out and sort of filled all the gaps up and all prepared.
Can you tell me what happened leading up to the actual battle? What the atmosphere was like and what sort of things happened?
Well, you're really excited. You know it's coming, and you know all it is will it be tonight? You know, you went up at night. Will it be tonight we go up, or will it be tomorrow night? You know, you was expecting, and you knew you was within a day or two. And, well, all you done was sit and lay about. You done no training, nothing whatever. No, what I remember where we was some big hollers in the ground. Now, what sort of part around here could I tell you it'd be like? Well, along this end of Brattle with a canal bank leading up Old Brattle Road then. Seeing we was in these hollers and the trenches was further over, and then a sort of a valley there where the battle was. Right.
Sorry, can you remember actually going up, you know, the you went up to the front line, were you, for the battle or not?
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, actually, we went up the night before. When we were there about 2 or 3 days, because the first thing you find out when you get in them places, the people that you're relieving, right? Whatever regiment it is, you relieve them. Well, when we got there, I always remember there was a batch there. I don't know, I've got a faint idea they Northumberland Fusiliers. I wouldn't be sure, but this batch was there, and I know I said to one of the chaps, I said, what sort of a show is it up here? You always inquire, whoever's there, what sort of place is it, you know? He said, it's a hell of a show up there. He said, air company's just come back, and as near as I can remember now, he said, there's only 57 of us come back. We've been up there digging slit trenches. See, well...
How many would there have been in the company to start off?
200. 200 in your company. There's only 57 of us come back, he said. You know, fit. Others had been wounded and so on. But they'd been digging slit trenches. Well, now, the main line of trenches had been there all a long time. Deep, strong, deep trenches, you know. So you walk along, room to pass each other. Well, now, before the battle, they dug what they call slit trenches in front. Now, they call them assembly trenches, that's it. Well, there was a trench, no deeper than that shelf, about up as high as that shelf, and only narrow, see? And they'd reach from here to the front door, see? And then that'd hold about 8 or 10 of you, see? It might be, roughly. And then there'd be a space, then another slit trench, see? Well, the idea was, after that, put a very heavy barrage on them when the battle starts. They put a hell of a barrage on, you see, your people do, your own. And then while that barrage is on, then you move up from your deep trench into what these call these slit trenches, assembly trenches, see? That's the drill. But it never happened. Oh, hell no. When it did actually happen, blimey, as soon as we went, they put a barrage on us as well as us on them. And there was us copping it as well as we went. Well, what I remember, my old mate, as I told you, hadn't gone for me at the front door before he went down. Yeah. When I got to the slit trench, I jumped in. I mean, before I knew where I was, there was an officer just behind, come behind. He says, come on, get out, straight on. And that was all there was to it, and away you went.
Can I just take you back a bit? The actual preparation for, you know, you knew you were going to go over that early that morning.
Yeah.
Was there any preparation? Were you given rum, for example?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I told you on the tapes, because I'm having to recall what I told on them, but I know I'm right. Yes, well, in the very early, as soon as you got there, you went up at night, see, when it got dark. You went up and filled this main trench right along, packed in like sardines. And an officer, he'd walk along backwards and forwards to see if everybody was all right, you know, see if you're all right where you stood together in bunches, sort of shoulder to shoulder, talking, but ever so quiet. Well, then in the early hours of the morning, be very quite early, they come along and give us all a mug of hot tea, and it was half full of rum. I'm sure half of it was rum, but you know, it made you feel beautiful. Well, that's what we had, and then eventually the officer came along and, you know, sort of, well, won't be long now, perhaps in about another half hour or so, that sort of talk, and he come to me and this other kid, me and him were pals then, as I powered up with at the base, he see we'd got wound stripes, see, so he could see we were sort of old soldiers then. He said, I want you two on the machine gun. I said, I don't know nothing about a machine gun. He said, don't matter about knowing anything. He says, I'm putting you two with them. He said, I want you two to carry the ammunition. See, that they was in pans then, this old Maxim gun. Stand on a tripod and all that, you know, with the old machine gun, all old-fashioned. Well, there's a team of about four or half a dozen on it. Well, then, wanted us to help carry the ammunition, these pans of ammunition, in a webbing case. So I had a load and he had a load, but I tell you, we hadn't gone far when down he went. And I was with this machine gun section and I was going close then by this chap by me. He was carrying the tripod that I put the gun on. Well, blimey, down he went. And I thought, well, I went a bit further and I couldn't see nobody else. And I thought, well, here goes. So I threw my pan away and kept on. And that was all within 50 yards from where we started.
Why couldn't you see anyone else?
Because it was dusk, you see, it's just dawn.
Just
before the sun got up, yeah. And not only that, you know, you get all them bursting showers, it's all smoke. See, it's all like a fog smoke, black smoke from all that shrapnel and stuff.
So you just kept walking forward?
Kept going, yeah. And then, as I told you, when I got to that slit trench, there weren't many. I'd never noticed anybody else, tell you the truth. Might have been one or two, but I never know. You don't know what you're doing. I know you don't know what you're doing. And then I remember this officer saying, go on, away we go, you know, sort of. And climbed out and waddled across no man's land till I got to their barbed wire, and that was it.
Can we just go back a bit? Those slit trenches, far in advance of your...
Why, I should say 100 yards.
So that company that was coming back had been sent 100 yards in the middle of the night, presumably?
Yes. They'd been out there digging them in the nights, you see, for weeks. Weeks they'd been at it, different ones, yeah, digging them slit trenches.
And how far was the German?
Well, the Germans, we were a fair distance apart. I should say, let me see, because it's jabbed memories. It's sort of a valley, you see. We started off one side of this valley, as the saying is, and they was on the other side, like a bit of a valley. Now, how far should I say that valley would reach from just behind our line to just behind their lines, behind their second line. Because I told you I could see when I got beyond their second line, I could see across open country. It'd be from the chemist there, and look down the bottom, it'd be perhaps farther than... It'd be quite as far as from there at the Newport Road, between the two lines. I should say, as a rough guess, you know, what I can remember of it. You've got to go all across that open no man's land.
So it's only, but you're only talking about, a couple of hundred yards?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
200 or 300 yards, yeah.
So...
Well, that was swept with machine gun fire from them. See, they knew there was a battle. You see, well, the Germans, they'd got machine guns trained all along that. Naturally, same as we used to have our guns, machine guns trained on them in case they attacked us.